Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levin.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. This is Mark Levin. Today, I am talking to you from my home in Alexandria, Virginia, just across the river from Washington, D.C. Center for American Progress, where I normally broadcast, is closed today for New Year's. It is Monday, December 28th. And if you're listening to me on this day, you're listening to me live. If you're listening to me on January 1st, well, that's because it's going to be my very last live show, certainly of 2015. New Year's is around the corner. New Year's leads to me and, well, all around the world as a day of reflection of where we've been, where we're going in our lives. And this New Year's marks a major change in my life. I'm moving from the radio and TV world into the political world. And most of you know I've been elected as a delegate to represent my hometown of Alexandria, Virginia, as well as portions of Arlington and Fairfax County in the Virginia State General Assembly. I will be in the House of Delegates, one of 100, and I will be able to write bills and hopefully pass some legislation. In fact, I'll be sworn in just a couple weeks, and if you happen to live in Northern Virginia, actually anywhere in the Commonwealth of Virginia or in D.C., and you want to come down to my inauguration, my swearing in, my ceremonial oath of office, hey, find me on Facebook, and I'll make sure you get details on how to come see me. Be great to have you there. I was thinking today about all the radio shows I've done, what got me into radio, because like I said, it's a real time of change for me. It's the first day of the rest of my life. Let me assure you, by the way, I'll be back. The Virginia General Assembly is a temporary, that's not the right word, let's just say a seasonal job, probably a better word because I hope it's not temporary, a seasonal job. They meet from January to March, and from April to December, they don't. Now, they can meet then, and there will be committee meetings and things like that. But the actual session is just the first 3 months of the year. So I will be back on air, but I won't be back on air until Monday, April 4th. And if you're listening on the 28th, I should tell you that I do have one more show, a new show. It's not a live show, but a new pre-recorded show with a terrific guest, Robert Shapiro, where we go over the 2016 race, and particularly the breakup or potential breakup of the Republican Party. You don't want to miss that show. That's going to be Wednesday. It's a new show, never been heard before. So please tune in for that. But if you're listening on Monday, this is your last chance to call in and talk to me in 2015 and really for several months. So I'm going to encourage you to call in, particularly if you haven't before, at 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. As I wax nostalgic about, well, what I did to get here. Some have asked me how I got my career in radio and television, and I'm going to tell that story today. I think it's appropriate at the beginning, and it's appropriate at the end. And also, some of you may want to know about what I'm going to do in the Virginia House of Delegates, so we can talk about that too. As I said, it's a reflective day for me, and if you do want to call in, and it is Monday, please call in. Now, if you're listening on January 1st, well, just know this will be my last voice to speak to you until the beginning of April. So who the heck is this guy talking to you on the radio? How did I get here? How did I end up in radio? I have to tell you, it was by complete accident. I certainly never thought I'd be a radio guy. Never dreamed of it, actually. It all started, well, when I was a lawyer in Los Angeles back in 2000, and there was an election between George Bush and Al Gore. As we now know today, or anyone who's actually studied it knows, Al Gore won that election hands down. He didn't just win the popular vote. He also got the majority of votes cast in Florida. No matter how you count it, one Chad or two Chads or two quarters or three quarters under any system of counting, as long as you count all the votes, Al Gore won the state of Florida and therefore won more than enough electoral votes as well as the popular vote. According to our Constitution and system of laws, Al Gore was elected president of the United States in 2000. But we all know that didn't happen. And it didn't happen because all the votes in Florida weren't counted. And they weren't counted because even though Florida was proceeding to count all its votes and was ordered by the Florida Supreme Court to count all its votes, and even though Al Gore wanted to count all its votes, George Bush did not. George Bush knew if you counted all the votes in Florida, he would lose, or at least he suspected it. And indeed, the Supreme Court, Justice Scalia and four others, said so. They said in an opinion called Bush v. Gore. It was actually not even Bush v. Gore. It was the injunction stopping the vote count that occurred on December 9th, 2000. They said, if all the votes are counted, it will damage the legitimacy of George Bush's claim to be president. In other words, we know Al Gore has won this election. We cannot allow that to happen. Now, this was extraordinary in American history. It was a coup d'etat. The people chose Al Gore under the popular vote. The people chose Al Gore under the electoral vote. The people of Florida chose Al Gore. They had counted the votes. They were in the process of counting all of them. And the Supreme Court said, stop. Quit while Bush is ahead. Don't count those other votes. Now, that's unusual for the United States. It might have been common in a Latin American country or in Ukraine or Russia, or we could think of a lot of countries where they don't have a democracy. But in the United States of America, we were supposed to follow the Constitution. And I have to admit, I was too stunned to be outraged. I was outraged, but I was more stunned. I had thought better of my country. I had thought that the United States would not steal an election, that five people in the Supreme Court who had no legal right to intervene in that election would stay out. I thought that, you know, we Americans, we go up against each other, and sometimes we win the elections, and sometimes we lose. I had voted for Dukakis. He had lost to George H.W. Bush, and I accepted it. I didn't like it, but I accepted it. This was different. This was shocking. And what was more shocking to me as an attorney and someone who studied the election law and watched it very closely and had actually sent off briefs to the Gore camp, it shocked me that not enough people were angry, that not enough people were surprised, that not enough people were frankly rioting in the streets. After all, when they stole an election in the Ukraine, the people there burned down the parliament. Why were Americans taking the loss of our democratic freedoms so quietly? And I decided it was because a lot of people just didn't know the law. They thought the Supreme Court had actually a basis for its jurisdiction. They thought the opinion, which they hadn't read, might logically make some sense. And I searched hard, not because so much I wanted Gore to win, but because I wanted the country to follow the rules. I looked up and down Bush v. Gore, trying to find some semblance of law, some logic, maybe something I hadn't thought of, some way in which a court could legally stop a vote count and declare a victor before all the votes were counted. But the opinion was contradictory. The opinion said we're going to count all the votes, but we're not. We're not going to set a time limit for democracy, but we are. We're going to follow the law, but in fact, you should never ever cite this case as precedent because we recognize what we're doing is lawless and therefore should not be repeated. The opinion itself admitted that it was a crock, and it said in legalese that maybe only lawyers could understand, we are stealing this election. And so I wrote an email to about 20, maybe 25 people, where I explained the opinion. I simply went through the opinion in a nice little, you know, frequently asked question format, question answer. I explained why the opinion contradicted itself, and I did so in a way that was somewhat humorous. It was dark humor, to be sure, but also we had a plan of action in it. It was to filibuster every single Bush judge until we could have a democratic election, one where the people under the Constitution chose the president of the United States. And again, I'm a lawyer in Los Angeles. Okay, radio is the furthest thing from my mind. I'm just upset that in my country, they're stealing an election right before my eyes and it appears that no one even is noticing. I feel like the little kid who said the emperor has no clothes. You know that fable, right? The emperor decides not to put on any clothes, to go outside naked in his birthday suit, and he told everyone it was a new suit he was wearing, a new suit of clothes. And if you were virtuous, you could see the suit. But if you weren't virtuous, you saw him naked. And so no one wanted to admit that everyone saw him naked until the little child said, "The emperor has no clothes." And then people realized that they'd been tricked. Well, that's what I was saying. The emperor has no clothes. And I sent this email to 20 people. I urged them to pass it on. And that evening, I got back several hundred emails. And I thought, wow, people really passed it on. And then the next day, I got several thousand emails. And then the next day, I started getting about 1,000 emails an hour. Everyone wrote to me. Congressman Henry Waxman, chairman of a powerful committee, wrote me that I was dead on right. Sandra Day O'Connor's court clerk wrote me that I was dead on and that his boss was a hypocrite, that she had no right to take the case, that what she'd done was unlawful, and, oh, could he please teach my opinion in law school? Heck, I just had written it in an hour. It had typos in it. Michael Moore caught it. Sent it on. He changed my title. I had called it the Gore Exception to the Rule of Law. He called it a layman's guide to Bush v. Gore. And at one time when I used this newfangled search engine called Google in 2000, there were more than 1 million references to Mark Levine, Bush, and Gore. Today, you can still Google Mark Levine, Bush, and Gore, and I suspect there's more than 100,000, though at a time it was on virtually every website. Now, again, I did this by sheer accident. Sure, I was angry. I was upset. I never meant to create a movement. I just sort of explained to my fellow Americans that this opinion was BS and that they'd stolen our president. I started getting calls from radio shows across the country, not just in Florida, though I got a couple dozen calls in Florida. I got calls from New York, LA, Chicago, all the biggest radio stations in the country. Who are you? I've got 10 of these in my email box. This is the pre-spam days, back when you used to get emails only from people you knew. And this thing spread like wildfire. I had no idea it would spread that far. As I said, I had called it the Gore Exception to the Rule of Law. Michael Moore renamed it Layman's Guide to Bush v. Gore. In fact, this not only started my radio career, it started my political career. I got a call from the Congressional Black Caucus. "Hey, Mark, we'd love if you'd write a brief challenging this decision of the Supreme Court on the floor of the United States Congress." I said I'd be honored to. And so I did. I wrote the brief challenging this. Of course, in Congress, it was a political decision. And we lost because the majority in the House, gerrymandered to Republicans, supported George Bush. But the point is that for me, I simply saw something I thought was weird, unjust, un-American, and I called it out. And I got started in radio and politics. I was a trial lawyer in Los Angeles, is all I was. Soon after I wrote that brief, I got hired by Congressman Barney Frank to be his legislative counsel. I moved 3,000 miles across from Los Angeles to Washington, D.C., worked for him for 3 years. And I also did a couple dozen radio shows. And I taped them. I taped a few of them. I did it on a cassette deck. Remember those? We old fogies know what a cassette deck is. And that cassette deck, I'd later turn around when I left office working for Barney Frank, and that would become the genesis of my radio career. I'll tell you a little bit more about it after the break. If you want to call in, I know we've got a couple of you holding. Join the queue. I'll get to every one of you. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Thank you, all of you who are calling in. We've already got four people on the line. Kind of a goodbye show for me for a while. I'm not leaving the air. I am coming back in April. Many of you know I'm going to be serving as a delegate in the House of Delegates, state representative in Virginia, and we meet from January to March. So this is my last live show of the year. By the way, I have a pre-recorded show you don't want to miss with Robert Shapiro on Wednesday in this same time slot. One you haven't heard before. Brand new. In fact, we're going to pre-tape it. Haven't even pre-taped it yet. So that one we're going to do. We just won't be able to call in. And we're going to talk about the 2016 race and how he thinks the Republican Party is falling apart. And then this same show will be repeated on January 1st, New Year's Day. But this is the last show that I'm going to have, the last live show where you can call in. I already have five calls on the line. Tell you what, let me finish my story real quick. And then after the half hour break, we will take each and every one of your calls. I just wanted to say, so I came to Washington. We didn't win our challenge in Bush v. Gore. And then went to work for Barney Frank, very powerful Democratic congressman, for almost 3 years. And then, well, the Republicans were still in control. I kept seeing things they were doing wrong. I learned, for example, how George Bush was violating Homeland Security law by basically refusing to let localities know that they were when they were under threat because he wanted to use it for political reasons. That's another story. In fact, it's the very first story I told on the radio. If you go to marklevinetalk.com and go to my very earliest radio show in June or July of 2003, I think it was June 22nd, 2003, you will hear how I talk about how the Bush administration in my very first show was violating the rules and basically hiding real danger. The point is, I saw a number of things that happened just working in Congress, things that were public, but the press wasn't there. It was very much like Bush v. Gore, where I saw something obvious and wrong, and nobody was talking about it. It wasn't on CNN. It wasn't in the New York Times. It wasn't in the Washington Post. So I decided that one of the best things I could do was get on air and talk about it that way. I took the tapes, the cassette tapes I had from my Bush v. Gore talks all across the nation. I went to a local radio studio in Leesburg, Virginia, which was the only one that would agree to put me on air. I tried several others. They started me Sunday night at 8 o'clock, which is dead time in the radio world, but it caught on. It caught fire. It grew until, well, I'm on the 40-odd stations I'm on now. And started television in 2009. If you haven't seen me on TV, go to marklevinetalk.com. I'm still regularly doing TV. I was on Fox twice last week, and I've been on local channels really every week for the past several months. Check it out. You could still watch me and stay in touch. You can put me on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter at marklevinetalk. I'm not going away. I'm just going to serve my country and my state for a while. And doing that. And after I take your calls, when we come back, I want to talk about my future in the Virginia House of Delegates and what I hope to accomplish there and why I'm really looking forward after it's over to come back on the radio and tell you my thoughts on it. So all the lines are full. I will get to each and every one of you when we come back after the break. This is Mark Levine, and we'll be right back right after this.
Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. This is my last live show for a while. My last live show in 2015. I am doing a pre-recorded show, so please keep going back to this station. I'm doing it on Wednesday with a wonderful guest talking about the 2016 race. You won't want to miss that discussion. And of course, Leslie Marshall will be filling my spot while I'm gone. You won't want to miss her. She'll be there from 3 to 4, January through March, as I go into my new job as a state representative, a delegate in the Virginia General Assembly. And then I will be back. So keep listening. Come Monday, April 4th, I want a big crowd to all welcome me back on the air. I'm really not going away for long, folks, even if I'm a little nostalgic. I will be back, and by then I'll be a seasoned politician. And we'll see what it does to me. I may have to sell my soul to get there. So I'm talking a little bit about how I got in radio and why I'm doing what I'm doing. And since it's your last chance to talk to me, I thought I'd go and, take some calls right now at 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Let's start with an old standby who's called many, many times, Reggie in Georgia on line one. How are you, sir?
Yeah. How you doing, Mark? And happy holidays, man. And I hope you have a very happy new year to you too, man.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to be doing incredible things. I don't know what yet, but I'll let you know what happened in April.
Okay. Okay, so you're going away on a three-month sort of sabbatical, so to speak, to serve your country.
Well, you could call it a sabbatical, but I'll be working hard. I'm going to be living in Richmond, Virginia, the capital of Virginia. That's not normally where I live. I normally live outside of Washington, D.C. in Alexandria, Virginia. And I'll be living down there, and I'll be working, God knows, 12, 14-hour days and writing legislation. And who knows, maybe Leslie will one day call in and check on me during those 3 months, but I won't be able to host a show. I'm just too busy doing other things. I'll be back beginning of April.
Right. And I just wish that a certain political candidate would leave the race right now. You know exactly what I'm referring to. You know, the one with the big, fat, loud-ass mouth and the dead cat sitting on top of his head.
It'll be interesting. When I come back on the air on Monday, April 4th, I think we'll know the Republican. I think we already know the Democratic nominee. I think it's Hillary Clinton. But I think we'll know the Republican nominee as well. And so a whole bunch is going to happen while I'm gone. And I don't really know what's going to happen. In some ways, I hope Donald Trump wins because I think we can beat him. On the other hand, he's a very scary person. And if he were to actually win the presidency, it would be more frightening even than George W. Bush. So I don't know what to wish for.
Well, I wish that you would respond to him a bit more, shall we say, aggressively. I mean, you know, attacking her and her husband is one thing, but when you attack her family, you know, like their daughter, their son-in-law, and their grandkids, that's pushing it. That's going too far.
He attacks everyone. I mean, I thought when he attacked Mexicans, he went too far, and then he attacked Muslims, and I thought he went too far, and then he said, what'd he say? The blacks love me. He said horrible things about women. He said, there's just so – one of the things we're going to talk about in the pre-recorded show, which you should tune into, Reggie, on Wednesday, is all the offensive and things and just false things Donald Trump has said and why that actually gives him support among Republicans, which tells you something very interesting about, the culture in which we live. So tell me something real quick, Reggie, and then I'm going to let you go because I got four other callers on the line. I want to give a lot of people a chance to call in today.
Well, I just wanted to know that – I just hope that you have a – you know, very happy new year with your, your new job, your new temporary job until you return back to the airways on April, right?
Yep.
And I wish that people would call Donald Trump out on his BS bullcrap a whole lot more.
We'll find out. And in the meantime, if you miss me, you can go to marklevinetalk.com. I have more than 2,000 radio shows and more than 400 TV shows there. Plenty to keep you company in the 3 months while I'm gone. So thanks for calling in, and thanks for being a regular, Reggie. It's people like you that are the reason I'm on the air. I love my callers. I love my regulars, and I appreciate your calling in. Let me go to Helen in Ithaca on line two. Hey, Ellen, how are you?
Hey. Oh, you love me. Okay, thank you. We've never met, but
well, I think I said, how are you? But I love you. I love all my listeners, even the ones who give it to me. I think that's what makes talk radio so wonderful. So welcome to the show.
I want to congratulate you on your delegacy, which is soon to commence. So we won't hear you on the air. But I wanted to ask you two questions, which are sort of big. And you could probably talk about these things for several hours. But since you do have a background in law, what do you think – two questions. What do you think about the Supreme Court getting, like, a tenure for life? You know, I think it's a bad idea. But anyhow, but also, Roberts, our Chief Justice, he had a lot to do with having Gore lose. And Rehnquist sent him down to coach that legal team down in Florida. And I think he's a clever little rat, is what I think about John Roberts. That's my opinion, you know. So the question is, John Roberts, and what do you think about having people on the court forever, especially if you're someone like Clarence?
We'll deal with them in the order in which you asked. Lifetime tenure, of course, is in the Constitution. and it's in Article 3. I get the point. You don't want judges to be swayed by popular opinion. In some states, so in Virginia, in fact, we appoint Supreme Court justices for 12 years. That 12 years seems a reasonable amount of time. Still a long period of time. I think in those states where you elect a judge, you know, every 6 years or something, it's way too short. I mean, I agree they need to be insulated from public opinion. But no system of law is perfect. And obviously, I strongly disagree what the Supreme Court did in Bush v. Gore. It was just 5 justices, but obviously they changed the course of history. And I think they really damaged our democracy and our Constitution and the image of America in the world. You know, in America, we're supposed to be the country where we can argue all we want and then have a vote and then the majority wins and then we move on. In Bush v. Gore, Gore won and they still put Bush in power. And that to me has always made me think of America more as a tin pot dictatorship. Well, not dictatorship. Let's call it a tin pot democracy rather than a real one. It's always left a sour taste in my mouth. In fact, on the other hand, though, it propelled me into politics. I felt like my country needed me. I felt like I couldn't just sit in Los Angeles making money as a lawyer. I needed to travel to Washington, D.C. I sort of imagined myself on my white steed with my, you know, lance in my hand, maybe attacking windmills the way Don Quixote did. But at the same time, I felt like my country needed me. And I was just – I would argue that Bush v. Gore – if you want to know why we have corrosive – partisan politics and the ugliness of Donald Trump, I think Bush v. Gore set the stage for that. Once Bush v. Gore said, we don't have to obey the law or the Constitution or the rules, that we're just going to take the reins of power in a coup, I think it allows for people like Donald Trump to say, hey, it doesn't matter whether I'm telling the truth or not. I'm just going to do what I want. So I'm not going to second guess the founders here. I'm okay with lifetime tenure. I just think we need to pick better Supreme Court justices. And it really sickens me that George Bush, who was illegally chosen by a Supreme Court, could then appoint 2 other members, including John Roberts, illegally as well. I think that until Bush and until Roberts and Alito are off the court, there'll always will be that stain. Now, Chief Justice Roberts obviously was not Chief Justice during Bush v. Gore. Rehnquist was. I'm not sure, frankly, the role that Roberts played. I'm not so concerned about that as I am concerned about the 5 justices who are on the court, including people like Sandra Day O'Connor, who you may recall in that election when she found out Gore won Florida, and he did win Florida, said that's terrible, walked out of the room, and then a month later said stop the Florida vote count, we're not going to count the votes from Democrats, we're going to make sure Bush wins. That she should be ashamed of herself. I thought higher of her than some of the other people on the court. I knew not to respect Justice Scalia or Thomas, but I thought she would do better. So I was very disappointed by it. But as I said, it changed my life, got me on radio, and got me into politics. Thank you, Helen. You've been a regular caller also many times. I hope you'll stick around, listen to Leslie while I'm gone, and then come back to me at the beginning of April, all right?
Thanks. Yeah. Do you know that the Warren Court appointed Rehnquist? You know,
that's right. It was Nixon, but the court doesn't appoint a justice. Yeah. Obviously, it's the president. It was Richard Nixon.
The court doesn't do it. The president does it, and then it's the Senate has to approve of it.
That's right.
But anyhow, so Rehnquist is the one who got Roberts involved with the Gore incident in Florida.
I'm sure he did. I mean, Scalia actually had I think it was his son. Maybe it was his son-in-law. I thought it was his son actually appear before the Supreme Court in Bush v. Gore, which is grossly improper. You don't rule on your son's case. But again, the whole thing, frankly, it radicalized me. I was always a liberal, but I thought I was a liberal who could work within the system and make it better. And Bush v. Gore showed me that I needed to shake up the system, and I still believe that. So thanks for your call, Helen. I want to just get on to some others because I got a whole bunch of people on the line, which I appreciate, all kind of telling me goodbye today. So thank you, Helen. Let me go to Kevin in Santa Fe on line 3. Hey, Kevin, how are you? Kevin in Santa Fe, line 3.
Kevin, you there? His line is active. Maybe we'll try coming back to him.
All right, we'll come back to Kevin. Let's go to John in Taos, New Mexico. Hey, John. Line 4.
Hey, Mark. Congratulations on your new job.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm really looking forward to it. It's the first day of the rest of my life. This new year will be a real new year for me.
Hope you do us proud, man.
I'm doing my best. The way I see it, I'm representing Northern Virginia. I'm representing Alexandria and Arlington and Fairfax. I'm also kind of representing all the progressive views I've said on the radio now for a dozen years. The way I see it, I can't very well deviate from my views because I've said them. I've done 2,000 radio shows. I've got a record. So I can't really change my mind. I might as well go with the principles I came in with. And so I'm representing you as well. At least that's the way I see it.
Yeah, do us good. Okay, here's my question. In the 2000 election, several members of the House, maybe you can tell me how many, but it was several of them, came to the floor to challenge the decision.
They did.
And you know what they did? They needed one senator to back them up for it to come to a vote. And not a single Democratic senator would stand up with them to challenge the election. Can you tell me why?
I can, because I was there, John. The thing that they were signing on to was the brief I wrote. If you ever watch the movie Fahrenheit 9/11, and you see Maxine Waters at the beginning, and she's waving a piece of paper around trying to get people to sign, that's the brief I wrote, which you can still find online, by the way. It's a bit obscure, but if you have trouble finding it, let me know. I'll send it to you. I wrote it. I was hired by the Congressional Black Caucus. And according to the laws in place at that time, which came out of the disputed Hayes-Tilden election of 1876, these laws were written in the 1880s, and they said that you needed to have, you're absolutely right, one member of the House and one senator to sign on, and then it would go to a formal challenge. It'd be like a court proceeding on the floor of Congress. And there are several members of the House that signed on. We needed a senator. And we started lobbying senators. Of course, I wasn't involved in politics at the time, so I didn't have as much clout, perhaps, as I do today. But we learned that Barbara Boxer, senator from California, was ready to sign on and join in. And we were ecstatic because we wanted to bring this up on the floor of Congress. We thought we'd lose because the majority of the House was Republican, and at the end of the day, they would decide the election. But we wanted to show what a farce it was to America. We wanted to show that Supreme Court wasn't the final arbiter, it was Congress. And therefore, if an election was going to be stolen, let's have the Republican Party steal it openly rather than in the dark.
Right.
But I'll tell you what happened. And this is, again, it's amazing because I played a small effect on history. You may recall at the time, the Senate was split 50-50. There were 50 Democrats and 50 Republicans. In fact, the Democrats had the majority for just about 2 or 3 weeks because Congress comes in on the 3rd of January. The president doesn't come in till January 20th. And and Al Gore was still vice president and therefore president of the Senate, able to break the tie. We could win in the Senate, but we couldn't win in the House. The House was going to vote for George Bush. And in the event that the House and the Senate split on a vote of this kind in this disputed election, then it's up to the chief executive of the state from which the disputed electoral votes come to make the final decision. The chief executive of Florida at that time was Governor Jeb Bush. And Governor Jeb Bush, would have the right to cast the deciding vote for his brother, George W. Bush. And I wanted to force that to happen.
But
I wanted people to see how ugly it was.
Like
he was going to pick his brother. We needed a senator to sign on. But Tom Daschle at the time was the Democratic leader. And the Senate was 50-50. And normally when it's 50-50, if the Republicans are in charge with Vice President Dick Cheney coming in, then the Republicans would get the majority on all the committees and they'd have a majority leader. Tom Daschle made a deal with the Republicans. He said, if we know George Bush is going to win anyway because Jeb Bush is going to choose his brother and you don't want this ugliness, I'll make you a deal. Rather than giving Republicans majority on committees, we're going to have all committees be 50-50, every one of them split 50-50, which had never been done before. And in return, we'll make sure no senator signs on to Mark Levin's little bill here. You won't be embarrassed, and we'll get 50-50 in the Senate. And so they made that deal. They pressed Barbara Boxer. She backed off. And this is a story that I was aware of, but really hasn't been told publicly. That's the reason why nobody signed on from the Senate to the brief I wrote. And that's a true story. Is that interesting? I bet you haven't read that before.
As a matter of fact, I haven't. Sounds like a house of cards.
Kind of. Not quite that bad. But that's, again, one of the things that got me involved in politics when I saw all the sneaky stuff going on behind the scenes. So thanks, John. Thanks for your question. I got a whole bunch of other people on the line, and I want to hear from you too, but we're going to take one last break. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine and my last live show of 2015. And then I'm off to Richmond, the Virginia State Capitol, to serve as a delegate. But I'll be back on there. I'm actually going to be back on Wednesday. Don't miss that. A wonderful pre-taped interview. And then I'll be back on Monday, April 4th. In the meantime, you'll have Leslie Marshall to listen to. And I'm just, I got to tell you, I'm really pleased by the response. I've got 8 callers. Our lines are completely full. There may be others who've tried to call in. I'm going to try to get to each and every one of you, but I do feel the love. I appreciate that. And folks, I still exist, all right? I'm not dying. So you can still find me. Just follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk. You can post on my website, marklevinetalk.com. You can check out my delegate website, markfordelegate.com. I'm still around, folks. I'm just going to be, well, serving my country and my state for a little while. All right. I'm going to try to get to 3 callers in 3 minutes. So I'm going to do the best I can. Paul in Springfield, Massachusetts, line 5. Go.
Best wishes in Richmond, Mark. I knew George Bush when he beat Ann Richards to become governor of Texas by claiming she was not aggressive enough in her use of capital punishment. I knew he was going to get to the White House somehow and screw up the whole world. So, that was just really clear to me. So I just want to thank you for all your work. And can you hear me okay?
I hear you fine.
Great, great. So just I want to comment really quickly on something I heard you say right before Yom Kippur, that God wants us all to worship him in our own religions. We know that's not true because in the Torah, idolatry is specifically prohibited. Now, I understand that being gay is not really consistent, compatible with living an observant Jewish life. I'm a rare sort of observant leftist Jew. But if people want to know how to serve God according to the Torah, asknoah.org. Asknoah.org.
All right, Paul. Thanks for your call. I don't have time for a good theological argument. I do want to go to Gavin in Eugene, Oregon, on line 2. Gavin, go ahead.
Thank you. I know I have about 60 seconds, so I just want to say that you've quickly become one of my absolute favorite talk show hosts.
Thank you.
My only complaint is that you're not on for 3 hours because you're awesome. I just want to say I'm a 44-year-old high school social studies language arts teacher, and I was listening to – I've been wanting to comment for about a month on those guys you had, the millennials, talking about their take on things. And I remember I think the guy said something about, well, I live in the real world, and those single mothers should just go out and get a non-minimum wage job. They should just go out and get a better job. Because you can't support a family on a minimum wage job. That's for teenagers, right?
Right.
Well, I graduated with my master's degree in 2008 when the economy collapsed. The only job that I've been able to get in the past 6 months is a minimum wage job at Safeway.
I hear you, Gavin. And thank you for your sacrifice. Thank you for listening. I'm going to be fighting in Virginia. One of the things I'm fighting to do, by the way, is to raise the minimum wage. That's the very first bill that I authored in Virginia, and it's one of the things I want to be fighting for. And I appreciate your listening to me. If you're new, go back to marklevinetalk.com, and there's archives of thousands of radio shows, and you won't miss me until I come back in April. Thanks for your call, Gavin. My last caller is Rod in East Rutherford, New Jersey. You only got about 20 seconds, Rod. Make it quick.
Okay, I'm going to mention this very quickly. There's a matter of the voters in Florida that were thrown off the voter rolls who had the right to vote. There's also the 24th Amendment requiring voter ID, and also, I think, real quick,
because your time's up. The amendment, there's not an amendment requiring voter ID. That's something that some conservatives have done. But you are right that voters have been thrown off the voting rolls. And another thing I plan to do in Richmond, by the way, is two bills protecting people's right to vote. So I'm now going to finally fight for the ideals in person that I've advocated in the radio all these years. Follow me at Mark Levine Talk, and I'll see you folks next year.